The following programming is sponsored by D&D Media Group. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're in the Delaware Valley. Welcome to The Art of Pain Management with Dr. Q. How are you, Dr. Q?
Doing fantastic, Joe.
It's great to be here. I love this show. It's one of my favorite shows, and I look forward to it every month. And it's not only because I have such an esteemed host as yourself. It's not often I can sit next to a Harvard and Penn guy, unless I'm on the bus going to universities. But we also have some fantastic guests, and want to welcome into the program Chris Fox. Chris, how are you, sir?
Good. Thanks for having me, Joe. Thank you for inviting me, Dr. Q.
Of course, our pleasure.
And of course, it's the law firm of Gross Kenny. Lots to talk about it. If you will, Chris, introduce yourself and talk a little bit about obviously your path and of course a little bit about Gross and Kenny.
Sure. So I was just talking to Dr. Q out in the lobby before we came in, and I realized I really am getting up there in years, and that later this year I will have been a practicing attorney for 20 years. I passed the bar in October of 2002, so approaching that 20-year anniversary. And I've had my hand in workers' compensation to some degree since then, and almost exclusively since 2005. And I've had the pleasure and privilege of actually getting to work on both sides of the system here. First 10 years, I represented employers and insurance companies, which gave me that perspective. And then since 2011, I've been exclusively representing injured workers. The last three, I'm going to be coming up on 3 years in May with Gross and Kenny. We're a smaller firm in the scheme of things as far as workers' compensation firms go. We are a four-attorney firm, very dynamic firm, very experienced firm, very collaborative firm. And it's been a really good fit for me,
and the experience having worked on the defense side has to be an invaluable education and experience in representing your clients on the plaintiff side.
Absolutely, you want to have that counterintelligence to kind of understand how the other side thinks, how they're going to strategize, what their next move may be, what their goals are. So it certainly gives you an advantage when you're looking at not only the short term, but really the long term theory of a case or a vision for the outcome that you're trying to achieve for your client. You can kind of think about what the other side is looking to do. And it does certainly give you an advantage to have that perspective.
Dr. Q, if you would remind our listeners who may be living under a desert, under a rock on a desert island, a little bit about yourself and the practice.
Sure. So, as Chris was saying that he had been in law for 20 years, it's kind of crazy when I think back. This is actually my ninth year of practice, which seems like a pretty long time as well, but just went by so quickly. So, I finished my training in 2013. Prior to that, I trained at Harvard Medical School and the University of Pennsylvania, and then decided to stay around in Philadelphia. And so I practice out in Chalfont. That's where my main office is. But I also see patients in Center City, Allentown, Elkins Park, and Quakertown as well. And my specialty is in physical medicine and rehabilitation, as well as interventional pain management and minimally invasive surgical options for patients with pain.
And having said that, you treat a plethora of different types of injuries and different scenarios when somebody's injured, from individuals that are, have different conditions like, arthritis or were injured maybe even on their own property or whatever, from different conditions to injured workers.
That's correct. There's not one body part I haven't treated. I've treated things like a strange nerve pains in someone's pinky toe to catastrophic, spinal injury. So, and that's the nice thing with interventional pain management nowadays is that we do have the options and tools to essentially cover pain all over the body so that there's not you know, any one area that limits us. And also, you know, I see a lot of patients who get referred to me, and they had no idea that there were all these options. You know, they thought they had to live with these pain conditions forever. And so it's certainly nice to be able to address that.
And we're going to get into a lot of them areas, but I'd like to get a little personal right now. Chris, I'll start with you. What got you into the law? You know, you were an athlete. You know, you had come up a competitor. But, you know, choosing the law, what point did you know you wanted to be a lawyer?
It was something I always had in the back of my mind, but I don't think I really saw it as my true career path until sometime late in college. I went to Penn State undergrad, which Penn State is obviously a large state-supported university, and you have folks there studying everything from theater arts to neuroscience. But it tends to attract folks that are practical in their educational pursuits, for lack of a better term. I live with a few guys that were in the College of Engineering and a couple of guys who were business majors. And then I was the outlier in that I was in the College of Liberal Arts, which was more what I was interested in academically, but I really started to feel a little crunch as the time passed, and I had to figure out what my career path was as I saw my friends and colleagues really obtaining knowledge that was going to go to work for them almost immediately upon graduating. You know, they were going to work for construction firms or financial firms, and I bounced around from political science to history, and then I ultimately ended up with a major called labor and industrial relations, which was a good segue into law school. It gave me some exposure to some legal courses. I took a business law class within that major. I took a labor law class. I took an employment law class. So I got a sample of some kind of low-level survey legal classes, and they worked for me. So at that point, I turned my attention to law school.
It's kind of interesting how when you're 18 years old, you know, someone asks you if you have a major. Now, sometimes individuals will take a year or two to pick that major, but I think it's a gift to know what you actually want to do at a young age, but not certainly the norm. You know, when you're going, what a liberal arts education, you know, what is that? Does that set you up for a secondary education, you know, to in a sense, be exposed to a lot of different areas?
Yeah, and I think and what you learn in law school, and I, Dr. Q can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would think when you're in medical school, you're getting very practical and analytical type training versus law school.
Hold on, Doc. I got this one.
But law school is, I think law school is, to some degree, an extension of a liberal arts education, in that I didn't take a workers' compensation law class, and there actually are classes in that subject now at a lot of the local law schools. I know, for example, Drexel, Temple, and Villanova all do have those courses now. I went to Temple. There was no such course. I didn't know what workers' compensation was. But when you're in law school, you're being taught how to analyze facts, how to advocate, how to write. I think a liberal arts education is very much the same, in that you're learning how to think, you're learning how to process information, you're learning how to solve problems. So there are colleges, I mean, you'll hear colleges being described as a liberal arts college, and you know, 90% of the students there are pursuing this general education, and it doesn't necessarily translate to a trade or a vocation right out of school, I guess is the word.
It's interesting. Doc, what did you know what you wanted to do from an early age?
Well, you know, I was, I moved to the United States when I was 9 years old and my dad came a year earlier, and we actually were in Pittsburgh, and he was going to grad school, and we came with less than $1,000. So I went to inner city public schools, my whole life, and my parents really didn't give me any options. You know, it's I think it's every immigrant parent's hopes that their son goes into either law or medicine. In my particular case, my grandfather was a very renowned cardiologist in China. So my dad, my mom and dad basically forced me to go into medicine. In fact, I remember when I was in college, you know, speaking to what Joe was saying about making up your mind about majors. After my first 2 weeks in undergrad, I said, you know what, I'd really like business and finance more because, you know, I think I do have a mind for it. And I called my parents, and they basically said, no, go back to your bio classes. So from
was
then
it
on,
a real democratic conversation?
No, not. And, you know, in Chinese culture, the number one rule in Chinese culture is to respect what your parents' wishes are. So, you know, I couldn't, you know, being an only child too, I couldn't say no. So so I ended up, you know, going through with medicine. And, you know, I'm very thankful that I did. But I always do wonder, you know, what would have happened if I went into finance or something like that, you know?
You'd be probably working at a, you rent the cars and you'd be in the back room typing on a typewriter. It would have been a good life, but not worry. But you know, it's interesting, Chris, because you said you're both talking about the education, general education. But okay, now you got to pick a specialty in medicine, in law, and at what point, Chris, did you get into injury law? And go in that direction.
So right out of law school, I worked in Media, Pennsylvania, which is the county seat, Delaware County. And I was working for a small firm that was kind of a relic of a prior generation where you had some personal injury law, some criminal defense.
Like a general practice.
General practice. And he had, for whatever reason, he had a connection and he had one group of cases with a particular client it was a women's clothing store. I won't say the name of the store. It's actually out of business, but he had this one book of casework with representing this women's clothing store, which was workers' compensation. I don't know how he got it, how he held onto it, but
it was
doing defense work. And I don't think he really liked it, but it was a good source of income. It was steady, you know, hourly billable work. So as a young attorney, I was willing and ultimately able through his guidance to kind of take those files and run with them. And then when I left that firm a year or so later and went to what we would call an insurance defense firm in Philadelphia doing other types of insurance defense type of work like premises liability and things like that. And they said, wait a minute. You did workers' comp at your old firm. Can you cover this hearing on Tuesday? And then the rest is history because it's one of those things where there's a joke that, you know, people always are like trying to move out of workers' compensation and delegate it to younger people. I found once I got in, I wasn't out, but I've stayed in by choice. Once I got comfortable with it, I realized I really enjoyed doing the work. And over the course of the next several years, it was obvious to me just from my own personal leanings, et cetera, that I was more destined to do the claimant side of things and ultimately got that opportunity in 2011. So it was a little bit of a journey, you know, both academically and professionally getting to where I got. But hearing Dr. Q talking about his upbringing and Chinese culture and his parents, you know, kind of showing him the way and him following. It's amazing because I'm not going to say my parents were hands off, but it was a different Western culture and things were different. But ultimately, we all find our way, whether it's, you know, with a little guidance or meandering, we ultimately find our way. And we're sitting across the table both, you know, really enjoying good careers and God.
Well, I got it. You know, the Irish Catholic culture is almost the same. My father ran the union, okay, the Ironworkers Union, right? Which is, we build the high-rise buildings. Mm-hmm. I had just gotten fired from my bartending job. I was 18 working at a bar called Captain C's West End Pub in Manayunk, right? Mm-hmm. and he was a raving lunatic. You remember the show Dr. Shock?
You don't. I knew that.
My God, I just dated myself like you wouldn't believe, because you just wouldn't believe it. But anyway, there used to be this show called Dr. Shock, and he would have. And it was like they would play scary movies, and he was dressed like a ghoul or whatever. And his brother owned this place. His name was Captain Z. He was a raving lunatic of epic proportions. Anyway, I worked for him, and one day I got sick and I missed. And he told me, I walked in and he said, "You're off the team, right?" That's the way that there was no employment law back then. I was just right. So I get home and the old man goes, "I guess. You'll be in apprentice school tonight at 9 o'clock. There was also one of those conversations where, wasn't a lot of, I wasn't,
back and forth,
right. Yeah. Wasn't a lot of back and forth. Right. Cause of course I lived at home at the time. Ironically, I actually was an ironworker for, I'd say about 17 years before I, segued into the natural progression of a nightclub owner. Right. But having said that, Doc, how did you get into pain management?
Well, so the way into pain management, there's several specialties that you can go into that would enable you to do a fellowship in pain management. So I was looking at anesthesia, neurology, physical medicine, rehabilitation as possible ways to go into it. I chose physical medicine and rehabilitation because my grandfather, when he was a cardiologist in China, there was no physical medicine and rehabilitation. So he actually founded the field there because he looked at all his patients that had cardiac issues and heart attacks. And he said, we have to do something to rehabilitate them. They can't just lay in bed, all day. So he helped to start the field. And so that's, that was my first thing, was I decided to go into that field to help carry the family business, I guess, some ways.
That's almost like going to play baseball and Babe Ruth is your friend.
And then, I went into pain medicine. As I've told Joe before, I was a medical student in year three. So in terms of the practical nature of medical school education, they do have you in year three and four, rotate in the hospitals and work there. So I was working in a cancer hospital, and I was following this patient who was a retired ER physician from the Philippines. Unfortunately, he was there for pancreatic cancer, which, as we all know, gets often diagnosed very late until it becomes, very painful and difficult to deal with. So, I would see how much pain he was in all the time. And then one day, the attending physician ordered a consult from a pain specialist who came and then recommended that he have this procedure called a celiac plexus block. And so as a medical student, you think every procedure is a huge deal.
Learned that in the second year of apprentice school.
That's right. And so, I stayed behind really late that night and, went into the OR, and I saw this this pain specialist do this injection, essentially, using x-ray guidance. It took about 10 minutes. And then, I didn't think much of it. But I came back the next day. I saw, this gentleman that I'd been following with pancreatic cancer, and he looked like a completely different person. Just the color in his face was different, and his appetite was back. He told me his pain went from like a 9 to a 2, just from this procedure. So I became very fascinated with the field, because as I later found out, it's that's one of numerous options that we have, not for just treating musculoskeletal pains like from injuries, but patients with cancer, pain from cancers, all kinds of severe nerve injuries. And so when I decided to go into physical medicine and rehabilitation, found out that I could through that do a fellowship, I worked really hard in residency to be able to be accepted into one of the few accredited fellowships in the country here at Penn.
What's interesting is we had we've talked about this, and fascinating pain management. When you talked about that and the ability to, that's what I kind of where I was going earlier when I was asking you what types of individuals do you treat. It was fascinating to me. Obviously, having an injured workers program and a show that obviously talks a lot about it, and a nonprofit, you automatically think pain management is, just for work injuries or personal injuries or any type of backer. When you started talking about the different ways to actually impact somebody's comfort level who has cancer or an autoimmune disease. I mean, I was up at your office, and I will say this from that, and folks from all different walks of life, but a lot of individuals of people who had different types of ailments, and they were seriously injured people or seriously in pain. And having been through, I guess, a decent amount of pain, but having seen my wife in a lot of pain, and with addiction being so prevalent, and you know, the old, you know, family doctors that they gave you one, you know, you could, you know, it was one, you know, pill, whatever that pill was. I mean, a handful of options, and that's the only, and having the ability to take somebody, if you've ever seen somebody, and I know you have, Chris, because you've had clients that are catastrophically injured, but walking into somebody's office who's so in so much pain, they're actually scared that they're not. I mean, I've had a couple times in my life pain where you think to yourself, this is going to be the end, but it didn't last long. I was fortunate not to have it, but having that many options, and the doc, you're very obviously up on all the cutting edge practice. I take my own wife, so my wife who's got psoriatic arthritis, okay, it's not a work injury, it's not, but her rheumatologist finally said, you got to find a pain doctor, a pain management specialist. Well, I do a lot of radio. I run into a lot of people. To me, you know, we've had so I guess one of the first shows we did was with your partner, Jeff Gross. And, you know, Doc was so amazing on that show. I said, I made my mind up. I didn't even get out of the office. I called my wife and I said, I know where you're going next week. I know what appointment we're in. But guess what? The game changed. The game changed. Literally, yeah, we went for the appointment. And within a couple of days, you know, her comfort level and her pain was completely manageable. You know, and so that having the ability to do that, Doc, and almost create change almost immediately to impact somebody, it's got to be almost like a religious experience.
Well, it's certainly really nice to see the relief that patients get, especially with some of these newer options that we have now. You know, that can be a substitute for traditional open surgeries. You know, I was just reading or seeing a patient that I had done a vertiflex procedure for, and he was a very elderly gentleman. His back was so bad, it had essentially fused by itself because he has so much arthritis. And as a result, you know, his nerves were severely compressed. So he went to several surgeons who didn't want to operate on him because, you know, he's 82, he's got a lot of medical issues. So, you know, not someone that probably would do well with a big surgery. So he came and saw me, and you know, I told him about this new minimally invasive surgery where instead of, you know, opening him or, you know, doing a big incision, I can put a small titanium spacer to create space for the nerves in his back. So, you know, I ended up doing the procedure about a month ago, and when I was doing it, I couldn't believe how bad his back was. It was one of the worst backs I've seen. And when I did it, I was very skeptical to myself. I said, gosh, I really hope this helps, but I wasn't sure. But then I just saw him back last week, and he told me his pain went from a 9 to 10, and not being able to walk even the length of his driveway, now his pain was a 0. You know, and he's able to walk, and, you know, just because of this tiny spacer that I put in, so... Yeah, I mean, there's certainly...
And that was an arthritis situation?
Age-related changes. You know, as we all get older, all three of us will have that condition.
But I'm not going to.
But, you know, before you had to have major back surgeries. But yeah. Now we have these new tools that can save people from things like that.
Well, I was in the office when you did my wife's procedure. I could see it. I mean, of course, I was all across the room. And I mean, you know, just having those resources and having that... ability to do that. And I just, you know, the story about the pancreatic cancer and that's an inspiring story. And having gone into that, what did your family, did your grandfather think you were going to go stay in the heart? What did he say when you said, Pop, I'm going to try something else, but you know, it's obviously, you know, equally is impacting.
Yeah. So unfortunately my grandfather actually passed away, from a heart attack, third year of medical school, before he found out that I was going to, you know, go into all these, because you match your fourth year in medical school. But, you know, my dad and I, you know, especially Chinese New Year's was last week, and we got together. We always drink, you know, have some Chinese liquor on behalf of my grandfather, because he was a big, you know, he was big into it. And we always say that he's, you know, he may not be here today, but I'm sure he's, you know, proud of my accomplishments.
Absolutely. And I'm sure your parents, dad puts his arm around you and goes, you see, we made the right move.
Yeah.
Having said that, in your area, Chris, as a workers' compensation attorney, you know, somebody gets injured on the job, a lot of times that path can be a very difficult one. And it's so specialized that there's a certification with the state. Talk about that, because that the area of law, and there's a lot of areas, but there's only, I think it's the only specialized area where you actually have to be or can get certified, you know, because it's such so unique.
You don't have to be certified.
Right.
However, it is a credential that I always tell people that are looking for representation that's the first credential that they should insist upon, because you have still a certain number of attorneys who are not specialists. Generalists still exist, or you may have someone who, for example,
dabbles in it,
and that's the exact term we use. You know, or you may even have someone that has, say, a personal injury case. A personal injury attorney says, "Well, I'd rather not refer this out to someone who really has this niche practice. I'll just keep this for myself so I can get that fee too."
Disastrous.
And it is disastrous. It's really glaring when you see those folks in court, because they expose themselves based on their lack of experience in front of the judges. They don't know the nuances of the law. So I am a huge proponent of specialty law. And for the same reason, if someone calls me and asks me a question, obviously, if it's not in my wheelhouse, I'm certainly going to try to help them. But I'm going to focus on getting them to someone who I believe is really an expert in that particular area of law. And the same goes for medicine, obviously. I mean, hearing Dr. Q talk about what he does, and hearing you give your personal testimony, a testimony on behalf of your wife, it's really great to hear, because one of the areas that is frustrating for me, and I almost said painful, it's agonizing for me, not physically painful, but when I have a client who I can tell is so physically uncomfortable and in so much pain, and on top of that, they're dealing with oftentimes being taken to court by the insurance company or being denied benefits and having to take the insurance company to court. What I always try to tell them is, I'm going to try to take some of the burden off of you. I'll put it on my shoulders from the legal perspective. But where I feel helpless is when they tell me how much discomfort they're in, how much pain they're in. So that's why it's important for us to work with doctors like Dr. Q, who will think outside of the box. You know, they're not just like, to the same degree, and I'm not here to bash, you know, general practitioners of medicine either, but same way a general practitioner in law probably can't handle a complex workers' compensation case, a family physician that we all go to for A to Z type of problems, they can help you from A to Z, but they can't get to that next level like a Dr. Q can.
And it's interesting, because as a workers' compensation attorney, you have to know a lot of the medical. You have to, you know, I mean, you're not a doctor, obviously, but, you know, having an understanding enough to be able to direct somebody to somebody who can actually help them, because God knows they often run into panel doctors, which runs right through me. I know Doc knows that, where often, you know, they're treading water, and in the meantime, you know, the insurance company's trying to beat them up, and often they're not getting the right treatment. You have to know the medicine not only to represent them, but also to send them to the right doctor.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, with the example of a panel doctor, they're in a tough spot, because I personally think that there's an inherent conflict with panel doctors, because they really are serving two masters, in that they have the doctor-patient relationship, which they take an oath to uphold. but they're also trying to keep the person who's paying their bill, which essentially is the workers' comp insurance carrier, happy there. So to me, that's a conflict.
It's a definite problem. I mean, it's not a seamless type situation. When somebody's going through that type of situation, they often try to run, go it alone. They have other conflicts because they're dealing with their employer. If it's not a catastrophic injury where they're trying to make it, you hear when somebody gets injured on a job, you hear terms like, light duty or pre-existing injuries, where and people play on their loyalty there to their employer. When I say people, I'm talking about the insurance company and all those things. And people do injured workers do the best they can to try to, hang in there and do those things. They don't want to create waves, but they don't realize that the system's unforgiving. And the entire time that you're trying to figure your way out, you're getting tied in by, like a pretzel by the workers' compensation insurer. How often when you get this, when somebody comes to you finally, are they at the end of the rope and they did everything they could to try to, give their employer the benefit of the doubt, and it gets way bigger than that.
Right. You talked about your Irish Catholic upbringing, and there's this something in our culture that makes people want to stay away from lawyers.
Yeah.
And it's just that thing where
they don't want to make waves or anything
exactly.
like that.
Exactly. They think for some reason if they lawyer up, then they're taking advantage of a situation. You see these caricatures of injured workers being, lazy or gaming the system or whatever. In my 20 years of doing this, 10 on each side, I've seen plenty of instances of bad behavior on the part of the insurance companies. I've seen instances of bad behavior on the part of injured workers. But I can say, based on my representation of, at this point, I would say thousands of injured workers, that those who are taking advantage are few and far between.
Sure.
They are few and far between, and the vast majority of injured workers, they don't want anything other than being able to pay their bills, and if they need access to doctors, they want access to doctors.
What are the requirements that somebody has to use a panel doctor? In other words, when somebody gets injured on a job, the employer has some requirements, right, even though do you actually ever have to, unless you have a collective bargaining agreement, do you actually ever have to really use one?
Well, I would say the vast majority of the times that the insurance company and employer don't comply with the regulatory requirements that would enable them to keep someone on the panel for 90 days. You can say categorically at the 91st day, you have the choice to treat with whomever you would like, which is in Pennsylvania, which is different than a state like New Jersey where the insurance company decides where you go from day one to day 500. With Pennsylvania, in the first 90 days, the employer can, to a certain degree, try to limit folks to treating on the panel. But what I tell people when they come in for a consultation, if they're within that first 90 days, I tell them 9 out of 10 times, probably more, the employer really can't prove that they adhere to those regulatory rules that would keep someone on the panel. And also, you can always treat off panel. The worst case scenario is that the employer is not going to pay for it. You're going to have to force them to pay for it, which again, most times they will be compelled to pay for it by a workers' compensation judge.
Doc, how often do you get, at what point do you typically get involved in an injured worker's case when you are?
Patients who are injured at work get referred to me, perhaps by other physicians or, therapists, chiropractic physicians who've been treating them, and they notice that they're not improving with traditional or, just therapies alone. So I get a certain number of patients that way. And then I have patients that often will seek me out in the very beginning of their injuries because they feel like they feel that they're not being taken seriously, that their problem isn't being worked up. For example, if someone has, a clear pinched nerve in their spine situation where they're having all this numbness and tingling and their panel physicians not ordering the proper imaging or having them get the proper diagnosis. I have a large group of patients that'll see me in that scenario as well.
Yeah, it's such a very difficult type area. How you practice? You can quarterback a case, right? I mean, in other words, when you often. When you can be the individual, the doctor, almost of record, right? Who's, if there's specialists needed, you can delegate that as well, correct?
Correct. So, as a physiatrist, there's, and a pain physician, there's essentially, as we talked about earlier, there's not any single body part that I have not treated. If it gets to a point where a patient needs surgical intervention, then I would refer them to the surgeons who would do those surgeries if needed. But, fortunately, many of the patients, that I've treated haven't had to have, significant surgeries. But certainly the ones that do require it, I do send them out.
Contingency fee agreements. When somebody gets injured on the job, Doc, you, in other words, one of the things that that Chris had mentioned, and I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to The Art of Pain Management with Dr. Q on WWDB Talk 860. Dr. Q's guest is Chris Fox of Gross and Kenny. You not only quarterback the case, but you're handling situations where it might even be a denied claim. Right. And you've said something in a lot of ways that kind of like, hits at the heartstrings there, where you work, even if it's a denied claim, you work with the individual.
Of course, we don't bill the patients. I feel like they're already in a bad scenario, as Chris just stated. They're hurt. Their claim may be denied or in litigation. They don't have any income. So I'd certainly see them on I treat them, and if their claim goes through, then I'll get paid. If not, it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I went into medicine to try to help people in general.
But and that's where I guess the attorney would where a good attorney is you're working for all sides, right?
Of course, yeah. So when we have a doctor do what Dr. Q is describing, which is the ethical thing to do, he gets a patient needs treatment, he's going to provide the treatment. And vast majority of cases, I always say it to clients, these doctors are running a business, but they're going to provide you with the service because you need the service. And we're going to do our very best to ensure an overall excellent outcome for the client. And that also will include making sure that those that made the client comfortable and those that helped the client improve on a day-to-day basis are compensated for the services that they basically were fronting for them, because it is it's a financial predicament when someone has a denied claim and oftentimes they don't have other health insurance in place. So it's essential part of the equation to have doctors who are willing to go to bat for their patients. And they know that if the client has, or their patient in that case has good representation, vast majority of times they will ultimately get paid.
And the contingency fee agreement I was talking about, that enables an individual who's injured on the job to do what?
Exactly. So I always say to people, you will never write me a check. You won't open your checkbook and give me a retainer. You won't receive a bill for hourly services. Your fees to our firm, and this is not something unique to my firm, this is the general model of those that don't have income when they're out of work, they're going to pay their attorney on a contingency, which means if we ultimately recover, whether it's a lump sum or whether it's a weekly benefit, then we're going to receive a percentage of that as our fee. So we're actually paid directly by the insurance company, whether it's a weekly check that they're breaking off a percentage of that for our firm, or whether it's a lump sum settlement at the end, they're breaking off a percentage of that, the insurance company isn't paying us directly.
And often when somebody gets injured, and especially at the beginning, they're in sometimes a situation where they're getting paid, they're already getting paid, and sometimes they don't know that it's a temporary. They have, you know, you're naive, and I've seen it many times as an injured worker or an advocate where somebody is, they obviously don't know that what an accepted body part is, or they get, and so, but they start to see signs, you know, that, you know, they think they're going to get, something's going on. You as a workers' compensation attorney will actually, you know, engage with them. And in other words, without, you know, without actually taking, you know, a retainer, like, in other words, you're not even getting paid, but you'll also engage in consultations and stuff like that, just to help them during the process.
Yeah, I have a client who I'm actually conducting a voluntary mediation with next week, who I've been representing for just about a year, and countless phone calls, visited them in Berks County, interacted with the insurance company, interacted with defense counsel. I've spent tens of hours on behalf of this client, and none of it was payable. But similar to what Dr. Q described, I mean, you're going to do the right thing, and often and usually you do ultimately get paid.
Absolutely.
So, and there are cases where it's a denied claim where if we don't win, which is fortunately a slim minority of times we don't win, but we have invested the time and it's a loss.
But it comes back in a lot of ways because they'll refer a friend over. If you stick with somebody through an entire process, Doc, you work, not every doctor, speaking of general practitioners, will treat injured workers. And your practice is unique because you know, as much as you are fully engaged in injured workers, you treat, you know, all, you take, they're all different insurances. So work injuries are not the majority of your practice, correct?
No, it's only about 10% of my overall practice. So, you know, most of my patients are, you know, that are not injured workers, tend to be those who have Medicare.
Right.
Because as we all get older, we have aches and pains, you know, but I have a wide variety. You know, I've treated a lot of young athletes, you know, college athletes who may have pain conditions to you know, middle-aged weekend warriors that may have hurt their back, you know, to so it's a wide variety of patients that I see.
But one of the reasons, Chris, why a lot of, you know, so you go to your family doctor and they'll, even if you've known them for your whole life and you've never been injured before, a lot of them are like, listen, I'm not getting involved. Doc, you take their back. I mean, if even if it's a deposition or whatever, when you're treating somebody, you go to the hill for somebody, you know, as part of your practice.
Yeah, certainly. I try to do the right things. You know, if the patient's mechanism of injury seems, you know, reasonable to cause their pain and all that, you know, I try to take a very careful history, document correctly. I try to diagnose them correctly so that they're getting the right treatments.
And Chris, it's if it wasn't for doctors that are willing to go and represent individuals that get impacted, I mean, there's a lot of medical professionals that are quality medical professionals that will not do that. Why is that?
Well, I think going back to what you had asked about with the 90-day question earlier, a lot of doctors immediately shy away because they're afraid they're not going to get paid, particularly if it's shortly after the injury. A lot of them are also discouraged by some of the other tools that are available to the workers' compensation insurance companies, like something called utilization review, where you could be treating a patient, and if all of a sudden the claims adjuster decides they don't like the treatment that you're providing, they think it's too frequent or too costly or whatever may be the case, then they can start this process where they're basically challenging the reasonableness and necessity of your treatment. And while they're doing that, their obligation to pay is stayed. They don't have to pay the doctor. So then it puts the doctor into a tough spot with their patient. Do we continue to run a balance while this plays out, or do we tell the patient we need to hold off on this until this is resolved? So a lot of doctors just, I guess, don't want to deal with that. So, which I get to a certain degree, but it is nice to have a doctor who is a patient advocate. And that includes not only giving the appropriate treatment, but as Dr. Q just alluded to, at times we actually have to call these doctors to testify as expert medical witnesses.
How important is the credibility and the education and level of that physician that you're calling in to testify, because they're typically going up against, you know, a DO or an MD who's qualified on the other side. Talk about that.
Right. So the insurance companies are going to have very qualified experts who are specialists who are going to look at a particular alleged condition or injury. If it's a shoulder injury, they're going to have someone who is a shoulder specialist, or at least devotes a large portion of their practice to shoulder surgery. If it's a brain injury, they're going to have a neurologist. If it's a spine injury, they're going to have an orthopedic spine surgeon or an interventional pain management specialist or a neurosurgeon. So it's important for us to have the same quality of qualified experts on our side, because when a judge is ultimately assessing credibility, one of the things that the judge will be looking at is the educational and professional qualifications of the expert witness.
I like my guy right here. I like the Harvard Penn sort of, you know, you ever drop the mic, Doc? You just get done and say, listen, you know where this is going. We're going to take about a 3-minute break. We're going to have more from The Art of Pain Management with Dr. Q and his guest, Chris Fox, after the break.
Suffering from acute or long-term chronic pain can be a debilitating experience. Whether it's due to a work injury, a personal injury, an autoimmune disease, even cancer-related pain, or pain of another sort, Dr. H. David Q. is a Penn and Harvard-trained, double-board-certified pain management clinician who specializes in utilizing the most current and cutting-edge techniques and procedures to relieve even the most extreme levels of pain safely and comfortably. From non-invasive rehabilitation medicine therapies to minimally invasive in-office procedures that help relieve pain and avoid major surgery, Dr. H. David Q. puts a premium on patient care and experience so they can get healthy and put their lives back together. So if you or a loved one is suffering from pain and want a better solution, contact Dr. H. David Q. at 215-395-8888 and get the relief you need and the recovery you deserve. 215-395-8888 or go to penpain.com.
There's this place, a place where everyone is just beautiful, where everyone is thin, healthy, and in fantastic shape. It's a place where the beautiful people can eat whatever they want, whenever they want, and never gain weight. Where pro basketball players slam dunk chicken nuggets, hard-bodied supermodels supersize their soft drinks, thousands of weight loss diets guarantee you'll shed those stubborn pounds in days. Don't believe us? Just flip on your TV, look up at a billboard, or scroll through your social media feed for proof that everyone and everything here is just perfect. Where is here, you ask? Well, welcome to the state of America. Welcome to Obesity USA. Population 115 million and getting bigger by the day. To learn more, go to visitobesity.org. That's visitobecity.org. Brought to you by the Pennington Biomedical Research Foundation.
A gentle breeze blows across your face as you take a refreshing sip of water, appreciating the stillness of another morning fishing on the lake. The distant gurgle of a stream reminds you of days spent playing in the creek, the cool, clear water rushing between your toes. You love this time with nature. The feeling of putting everything on hold to connect with the world around you. Now, imagine it's all gone. No fish, no lake, no water. One of life's most vital resources, irreplaceably depleted. Time is running out to protect fresh water, and without our love, it can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our fresh water. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Art of Pain Management with Dr. H. David Q. Fantastic broadcast today. Dr. Q's guest is Christopher Fox, workers' compensation attorney from Gross & Kenny, acclaimed workers' compensation attorney. It's a privilege to be in the presence of really such quality professionals. It makes me proud because I know that individuals who are in need, and I'm passionate about this particular topic, when you're treating injured individuals and representing them, it can be a long, lonely road, and it can be a devastating one, and sometimes people don't find out until it's too late. We have a short period of time left, and little personal, but definition of success, Chris. I'm gonna take a shot at this. I'm friends with you on Facebook. Right. You are a fantastic parent. You coach the kids. You do a great job in most of your areas. You're a great attorney and all those things. But what is your definition of success, just in life?
So you kind of teed me up on that. Now, I will say, obviously, everyone knows that social media, everyone puts their best foot forward on social media.
Sure.
So I do try to, show what my kids are doing and what our family's up to if we're traveling and things like that. It often is kind of a glossy version of reality.
I mean, I'm not posting the argument I had with the wife last night.
Right.
Although I will tell you, no, go ahead.
But, you know, to your point, as far as success goes, I think, living comfortably, not lavishly, but living comfortably and being able to provide for your kids, give them access to the things that they want to do so that they're comfortable in pursuing whatever their dreams may be. On the other end of that, going back to the earlier part of the hour when Dr. Q is talking about following in the footsteps of his grandfather and carrying out the wishes of his parents, I think I always live by the mantra, if your mom knew you were doing that, would she be proud of you or would she not? Because when no one's looking, you got to always do the right thing. And if you think it's something that your mom would be proud of, then that's something you're going to want to do. So that's kind of the moral compass I try to live by. Success, is it financial? Is it familial? I think it's some combination of just being comfortable and happy and surrounding yourself with people that you love and have a good time in life.
Absolutely. Dr. Q?
Well, I think Chris gave a fantastic answer. It's hard for me to follow that up, but I can tell you, my definition probably has changed a lot. Having moved to the U.S. at a very young age living in a very poor economic environment, I used to think that success is tied exclusively to money.
Yeah.
As I've turned, I'm 40 now this year and having just had my first child, I realized that success is just, having the time and to do what you really want to do in life. Because if it's just about money, we're always going to be chasing it. And because of social media, there's always, you're seeing essentially everyone in the world. And so, it's not like the old days where you're comparing yourself to your neighbors or what have you.
Yeah.
So there's always someone who's better at everything than you. So I think success to me is just, being able to spend as much time as I can with my son.
And it's interesting because I would agree with both of you. I would say, and I think what you're saying, a balance across the board, having the ability and the opportunity to do what you want to do and be successful at it, but also spending the time with your family and impacting those lives. We only have a couple of minutes left, but sports is, Chris, something that you've been really successful at. And one of those things that probably makes you a great attorney, also that competitive nature and using those attributes. But I remember one time where my son, he was a very good student, absolutely a great, really well-adjusted young man, and couldn't be prouder, but wasn't as gifted athletically in baseball or whatever. But he tried real hard. He didn't make the team. Okay. And my best friend was the coach, right? And he called me and said, "What do you want me to do? He's got more heart than anybody I got," right? But it wasn't, that was my moment to be there as a father and say, "Listen, the only thing I could give you is the only thing guess what? It was an impacting, and being there and making sure that perspective and having your kids, trying to set them up for success no matter what the situation is, and be able to provide a living for them and standards and an example is kind of what you're both saying in a balanced sense. I mean, think about it for a second. You're a multi-billionaire, right?
But the kids
are a mess. You haven't seen them in a month, right?
Right.
I mean, right. Is that success? Because to me, don't get me wrong. I'll take the. I'm not. Listen, I'll take the bill, right? I mean, and I'll work for it and do all those things. But what I'm, it's almost what you're saying, and it's the fact that it's not just one thing,
right?
Okay, and you know, at the same time, you know, and you got, you know, having standards that. That can provide for your family, whatever they are. You know, not everybody goes through hard times, but you do the best that you possibly can. Success will, you know, in one sense or form will be there. So, well said, very, very interesting. And that's what I'm taking from kind of what we're talking about. Chris, if you will, contact information for yourself at the firm.
Sure. So, we are located at 1500 JFK Boulevard. That is our physical office, Gross and Kenny. I actually, Dr. Q and I talked about this, and it kind of works with the whole work-life balance thing. I've been kind of a mobile attorney for the past 2 years, working part-time out of the office, part-time out of my home, part-time visiting clients. So the best way I always tell people to track me down is on my cell phone. Which we give our cell phones out. That's another thing that's interesting about our firm. Our attorneys actually give our cell phones out to our clients, understanding that, you know, I may get calls from clients. I got a call from a client 10 minutes ago, which I was able to silence, and I'll call her when we're finished. And that number is 610-213-2826.
Awesome. Dr. Q, contact information for yourself at the practice.
Sure. The best way is to go through our website. It's www.penpain.com. It's updated weekly, and there's a form that goes directly to me. So,
all right, Dr. Q, another one in the books. Fantastic broadcast.
Great show.
Chris Fox, thank you so much for being the guest.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
Awesome. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to The Art of Pain Management with Dr. Q. We want to thank Christopher Fox, the law firm of Gross and Kenny, for being Dr. Q's guest. On behalf of Dr. Q and Chris Fox and Brett Cronenberger, our producer, I'm Joe Dougherty. Have a great day.